title.
The reasons for Sukkot and Sefer Purim.
Holiday about the deserts.
Listen carefully.
Okay. Not the official announcer now. Sukkot, a holiday about the desert, or a holiday about the land of Israel? Question mark.
Understand the title? In other words, Sukkot we're familiar with. Is this a holiday about the land of Israel or a holiday about the desert? Now, why would someone think that this is a holiday about the desert? Any logical reason to think that Sukkot has something to do with the desert? Yeah?
Does Sukkot, commemorating Adonai Akava, or one explanation?
That's one. Is there a pasuk that talks about this anywhere?
Yeah,
you might have seen it in your sukkah somewhere, in Hebrew. Even without transliteration. Who remembers? B'sukkot teshvu shivat yamim. Kol ezra pukle. Leman. Finish the words for me. Anyone know? Leman yidu dorotechem. Ring a bell? Anyone finish it? Leman yidu dorotechem. Ki b'sukkot. Not sounding familiar? So, just to make it easier, flip your page over. By the way, the title, that was the title. And on top of the source sheet, that's the topic. What's the difference between a title and a topic, you know? A title is what you want to hear. A topic is what the speaker... A title is what people want to hear. The topic is what the speaker wants to talk about. Sometimes they're connected. This time they'll be connected. But then take a look on the back seat. And I flip it over to C. And C, yeah. Source C on top. Vayikra Chav Gimel. Just look Pasuk Membet. You can figure out the gematria. Membet in the middle. Vasukot teshvu shivat yamim. You've seen these pesukim all chachlok, right? 7 days set in the sukkah. Every Ezrach in Israel, even tourists can say it, have to sit in Sukkot. Why? Leman yidu dorotechem. Translate that for me. In order that...
For generations.
Does it say remember?
No.
It says to know. Leman yidu dorotechem. Ki besukot hoshabti b'nei Yisrael. Am Yisrael was... What did God do? Hoshafti, what's that mean?
Made them dwell.
God put them into Sukkot. As God put us into Sukkot in the desert. When I took them out of Egypt, on the way to the Har Sinai to the desert. In other words, according to Chumash, and this is the main pasuk in Chumash that explains the reason for Sukkot, and why Sukkot is called Sukkot, we need not just to remember, we need to know something. To know something in the Bible is a much more close attachment. It's very deeper understanding. We need to know and remember the desert experience. Understand? And therefore, according to this, the holiday is everything about the desert. Because it's to commemorate the entire desert experience, which was for a long time. Now, why would Sukkot have anything to do with the land of Israel? That was the other half of the title. Why? It's one of the Shosh Regalim. What did the Shosh Regalim have to do with the land of Israel?
That's
how we came out of Egypt. That was in Egypt.
It's the path.
Shavuot, we got to Torah.
To
that was
to Israel.
What? Yeah, but so if we go to the Beit HaMikdash, remember God took us out of Egypt. God gave us the Torah. God kept us in the desert. But what's that do with the land?
All
what?
The events are on the way to the land.
No one from the Akiva. What?
Process to getting there.
Again, but why? We bring them from the land. Yeah? Okay, that it could be the whole reason we got to the desert was to get to Israel. But this is about the desert. Something real simple. What?
Israel's also a desert.
Israel used to be, but we came back and made it bloom. Listen, does Sukkot have another name in Chumash? Is that a drash or is that a pasuk somewhere?
Pasuk.
Want to take a wild guess?
Pasuk.
At the first time what we call Sukkot is mentioned in Chumash, it's called Chag HaAsif. Together with Chag HaKatzir and Chag HaAviv. Parsha Mishpatim, right after we get the Torah. What's Chag HaAsif mean? Chag is a holiday. Asif?
Gathering.
Together. What are we gathering?
Produce.
Which ones?
The
fruit. We'll talk about this soon. But if I understand the word, the phrase properly, this is a fruit harvest holiday. Chag HaAsif is my fruit harvest, which is once a year, the end of the summer. I'm celebrating the conclusion of my fruit harvest, which begins in July, August, and ends in September. You might have had grapes the last couple of months, since you've been to school. You've had grapes, you've had figs, probably not as much. Dates, not old enough, no. You had pomegranates, for sure, Rosh Hashanah time,
yeah.
During season. Olives, I don't know if you're to olives yet? That's the last one, but this is the end of the fruit season. Now, that has everything to do with the land of Israel, because in the desert, do we have olives and grapes and fruits? What do we eat in the desert?
Man.
What?
Man.
That was a joke. What do we eat in the desert?
Man.
Why was it called man? Because what do the people ask?
Man.
What is this, remember? They called it man. Now, so let me explain the title now. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, Sukkah should be a holiday about the desert experience, because we call it Chag HaSukkot. On the other hand, it's also a holiday about the land of Israel because we call it a harvest festival. Make up your mind. But Chumash says this over and over again, where it gives the same holiday has two different names, not just two different names, two different reasons. What I want to do in the shir is try to understand why they're connected. And you're going to help me. Is there any logical reason? Someone mentioned Shalosh Regalim before, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
You all know the Shalosh Regalim? Okay. So the first one is, what do we call the first? Shalosh Regalim. Pesach. And when do we celebrate it, approximately?
Nisan.
In the middle of Nisan, around the 14th or 15th. Is there any logical reason to celebrate the Exodus from Egypt on the 15th of Nisan? Any logical reason?
That's when we left Mitzrayim.
Oh, that's when we left. That would make sense. Is there any logical reason to celebrate the Torah being given in the 6th or 7th of Sivan?
Yes.
Why?
Because of the Torah.
Okay, that makes sense. Is there any logical reason to celebrate our stay in the desert, our survival in the desert, our living in the desert in Tishrei? What answer doesn't fit now? What was the answer to all the other questions?
Chronological.
Oh, back it up. Is there any reason to thank God for his 13 attributes of mercy and make a day of atonement on the day, on the 10th of Tishrei? Yeah. What
yes.
happened on the 10th of Tishrei?
He forgave us.
We got the second luchot, and God forgave us for chateigam. That makes sense. We got God's attributes of mercy on that day, at the end of those 40 days. So all the other holidays, the dates make perfect sense. But when it comes to Sukkot, right, there's no logical connection between the middle of Tishrei and 40 years in the desert. Now, is there any other logical date that I should celebrate our desert experience? If I wanted to save a little time, I could double up with Passover. You know, you got 7 days anyhow. Now, if I want a month, if I want to add a holiday, so why put it in Tishrei? There's too many already. Isn't it? There's plenty of holidays there. So what I want to try to explain in the shir is what's the logic of connecting a holiday to commemorate our desert experience in Tishrei, and also, why does it coincide with what we call Chag HaSi? Let's flip it back. Is there any logical reason to have a harvest holiday in the middle of Tishrei, a fruit harvest holiday?
Yeah,
why don't we have it in the middle of Shvat, or Tevet, or Adar? Because if you know the land of Israel, the fruits only grow once a year. There's one season. A season of fruits is about 2 months, 2-3 months, that's about it in Israel. The grain harvest is also about 2 months in the late spring, early summer. The reason why the fruit harvest is in Tishrei is because that is the end of the fruit harvest. That's got nothing to do with history, that's to do with nature. Make sense? So there's plenty of reason to make a holiday to thank God for our fruit harvest this time of year. But I don't need to connect that to my desert experience. There's enough reason to have a holiday called Chag HaSif this time of year, thank God for our produce. I don't need another reason. But for some reason, what is Chumash doing? It's connecting the two things together. It's taking a Land of Israel holiday, called Chag HaSif, right? Thank God, and I should thank God for my produce. And I'm connecting it to my desert experience, remembering that we were in the desert for all those years. So with that in mind, we're ready to go to work, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
The question should be crystal clear. If not, I fail. Or you're tired. The question should make a lot of sense. I'm sure it bothered everyone. Did that question ever bother anybody before? Isn't it logical that it should have bothered you? It's right there in front of you. But sometimes we're so busy with the little details, we don't look at the bigger picture. Now, the answer can be real simple, but instead of me explaining, I'll let a great commentator, his name was Moshe ben Amram. You've heard of him? What century was he living in, Moshe ben Amram? You've heard of Moshe ben Amram? It's a great commentary on the Bible. When was Moshe ben Amram living? Around when we came out of Egypt. He has another last name. After he got sneezed out. What do we call him?
Rabbeinu.
Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah. And he wrote a great commentary It's a famous book. What's this book called? Sefer Dvarim. Remember the book? You wrote it. He says so. I mean, it's his Moshe Rabbeinu's goodbye speech. And Moshe Rabbeinu, after 40 years as a rabbi, it's time to retire, he gives a powerful speech, reviewing the laws of the Torah, but giving lots of musar. And in his goodbye speech, which is almost the whole book, he reminds the people of Israel, as he's about to leave, and the people of Israel are about to enter the land of Israel, he's going to remind them about the desert experience, and finally explain to them after 40 years, why did God do this to you? Understand? It's like growing up and, you know, finishing high school, and then someone tells you, you know, there's a reason why you went to school. It wasn't just babysitting. You're supposed to be educated. There was a reason for all this. You'll see why I use that analogy in a minute. Because you might have got, maybe not you guys, but normal kids, go to 12 years of school and don't realize it was about education. It's about everything but education sometimes. But there was some logic in that process beforehand. So we're going to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu. We're going to now go to source A. And we're going to read, let Moshe Rabbeinu speak for himself. Good? What I want to tell you though, Moshe Rabbeinu in this section, in chapter 8 in Sefer Dvarim, in Parshat Ekev, is going to explain to the children of Israel why they've been in the desert for 40 years. And to see why, we just have to read. And who's going to be my reader? I need a volunteer somewhere in the middle of the group, somewhere in the middle or towards the back, with a loud voice, loud and clear. What school did you go to?
What?
What high school did you go to?
Yuma.
Oh, West Coast, yes,
yeah.
Okay.
Mitzvah.
Everyone have it? A1. You have a short sheet? Here, we're good. Read. Kol HaMitzvah. That's pretty classic. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, all these commandments I'm teaching you today, keep them, because only if you keep them will you be worthy of inheriting the land of Israel. In case you never heard of that, there's a commandment to live in the land of Israel, but that's more only on the condition that we keep the laws in the land of Israel. Remember, the land doesn't belong to us, it belongs to God, and we have it on the condition that we use the land properly to represent God. And God warns us over and over again, if we don't use it properly, he might even kick us out. Now, but Moshe warns them even before they go in. And now he has to explain the reason why it's so important to remember the desert experience. Listen to what he says now. Pasuk bet, loud and clear. A little louder. Remember what that means? V'zacharta remens. Remember the derech, the whole way. Which derech? Continue.
Hashem.
Remember your desert experience the last 40 years in the desert. It's been a long time. What was the reason? Laman?
Laman anotcha lenasotcha leda'at et asher bilvavcha hatishmor mitzvotav imlo.
Moshe Rabbeinu just explained that the desert experience was like going through school. It was an educational experience and a difficult one. Laman anotcha. You know what inui means? You shouldn't have to go through it, but inui means almost torture. But it means sort of suffering. God gave us a hard time in the desert. We'll explain later on. He made life very difficult for us in the desert, but for a reason, lenasotcha. What's lenasotcha mean? What's the word in Hebrew? Lenasotcha, what's it called as a noun? Nisayon. Remember the Akedah we read second day Rosh Hashanah? Vashem nisat Abraham. In English, what's a nisayon? You say test, I say nisayon. You heard the word? I'm sure you've heard that word, nisayon. That's not Hebrew, that's Yiddish. But there's no better translation for nisayon than nisayon. Now, when I say, who's heard that word nisayon? You've heard it before? In what context do they say it should be a nisayon? When did they tell you that? Instead of saying it's my fault. When did someone say that should be a nisayon for you? Give me an example when someone would say that. Yeah?
Kind of like when you're going through a hardship that you should
prove. Oh, you go through something difficult, and say, don't fret about it. Use that as a learning and growing experience. You had difficulty? Now you can appreciate other people's troubles. You can become a better person. Any difficult experience you go through, that I can redeem it by learning from it, I can turn it into something positive. Now, the word in Hebrew for a test is what? Mifchan. You might have had them. If you went here, you thrive on those, don't you? Don't you love getting straight A's? Didn't you survive through school just to pass another test and do real good and better than everybody else? That's cool. That's a mifchan. Now, there's a difference in Hebrew between mifchan and nisayon, even though in English they both mean test. A mifchan is administered by a teacher for the teacher to figure out if he did a good job teaching. If I'm a teacher and I give a mifchan, I learn from the mifchan because you show me what you know. I don't know if you understood the material. I administer a mifchan, and that gives me a way to assess if you know what's happening. A mifchan, again, is for the needs of the teacher. A nisayon is for the student. It's an experience you go through that makes you who you are, like the akedah. And that's why the word in Yiddish, a nisayon, is perfect. A nisayon is a difficult experience, which is a learning experience that I grow from. It makes you who you are, compared to in the army basic training. If you become a doctor, they call it residency, or stage. You've heard of that? Sometimes you put some, it's called sometimes childhood, or life. It's a difficult experience, but you learn from the experience, and you grow from it, and sometimes it's good for you. Moshe Rabbeinu will give you a good example in a minute. And why? Because before God can give you the land of Israel, what's it say? I need to make sure, can you keep my mitzvot, yes or no? There's a goal in getting the land of Israel, to be God's people. But there's no point in Am Yisrael conquering the land if God isn't sure yet that they'll do, at least there's a chance they'll do a good job. And therefore, the desert is a training experience. It could have been a couple months, but they failed, chet ha'egel. It could have been another year after building the Mishkan, but they failed the sin of the spies. They did so bad in this test, they were put back like 40 years. We had to bring up a whole new generation. Finally, they graduated. But Moshe Rabbeinu was saying the desert was a school experience. And you can't graduate until you're ready, until you pass the nisayon or the test. And then you're ready for the land of Israel. Got the idea? And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. It wasn't just, we didn't cross the desert to get to the other side. We survived the desert in order to prepare ourselves for the land of Israel. If later on, we're going to have a commandment to remember the desert experience, it's not going to be to remember that God took care of us. That's how it's often understood, isn't it? We were stuck in the desert and God provided for us. We call that in English, Hakaras HaTov. You've heard that statement before? Hakaras HaTov in Hebrew is Hakarat HaTov in English. Expression of gratitude. You've heard those statements, haven't you? It's like jargon. You have to show your Hakaras HaTov. Expression of gratitude, that's important. And it could be, I could understand Sukkot, I have to thank God for taking care of us in the desert. Because without God, we didn't have food, we didn't have water, and we have to be thankful. But that was so 4,000 years ago. What's it mean nowadays? The other way of understanding Sukkot is not to thank God for what happened, but thanking God for why it happened. And if it's an educational experience that got us ready for the land of Israel, why would it be necessary to remember? Not just an expression of gratitude of something that happened thousands of years ago, but if the need of that educational experience is eternal, you follow? If we needed that educational experience to get us ready for the land of Israel, then why do we, on a regular basis, do we have to remember that experience? Because the need is eternal. There's always a need to train and retrain. And I don't need to remember that it happened, I need to remember why it was necessary, why it happened. And that makes it not so 4,000 years ago, but so today. Follow the difference? What I want to show you now is the holiday of Sukkot is not to remember only that God took care of us, what I call recognition, expression of gratitude, but rather why it was necessary, to be fancy, recognition of destiny. But if the desert experience was to prepare you to become God's nation, then I need to remember why I needed that preparation. So now Moshe Rabbeinu is going to explain why that preparation was needed. One more line, and then we'll switch you. Okay, continue. He made you suffer, and he made you hungry. But after he made us hungry, what did he give us? First he took away our food, put it somewhere in the middle of the desert, no GPS, and what did we live from after we got hungry? What did God give us?
Man.
Now continue. Vayancha vayarivecha. Continue. Vayachelcha. No, you skipped the line. Vachecha taman. Yadata. I gave you the man that you never saw before.
Asher lo yadata v'lo yasun avotacha. L'ma'an hodya Ha'achat ki lo al halacha levado yechya ha'adam ki al kol motza ki ha'sham yechya ha'adam.
What were you supposed to learn in the desert? Something, if you're a little too close to the microphone to appreciate this. You're very close to Amic, aren't you?
Yeah.
But who says that? Surprisingly enough, if you'd walked down Amic a couple of times, you would think that people live to eat. You ever see that? It's a very logical conclusion. Chumash says no. Something startling. You don't live to eat, but rather, you eat to live. But it's much deeper than that. You need to eat. Of course you need to eat. But the goal is not eating. The goal is living. You know, being a productive person. Being an Eved Hashem. But in order to live, you need to eat. Now, if you're short-sighted and don't see bigger things in life, you might get the impression that you live to eat. Because what do you see people doing all the time? Not just eating, but working to put food on the table. And in the most basic level of society, that's what people do. That's what animals do, don't they? You need to eat to survive, and your whole life is dedicated to finding food, putting food on the table, and having what to eat to survive. Chumash is saying life is much more than that. Now, listen carefully. Now, Moshe is going to say one more step, one more line. V'yadata pasake. Yeah, finish that. One, then I'll switch you. Finish the first section. Yasser means not to give a hard time. I'll be politically correct, PC. Not as a father treats a child, but as a parent treats a child. Got it? Okay, it really means that. It's not father-son, but rather parent-child. Just like a parent gives their child a difficult time. Why would a parent give their child a difficult time? When you were growing up, you thought, oh, they're just being so mean to me. I have to make my own bed. You never heard of that, did you? I have to make my own living. I have to make my own allowance. But why do parents do that? They might have plenty to give you, but you have to teach responsibility. You have to teach a young child growing up to be an adult. And just like a parent, sometimes they appear to be giving the child a hard time, they're doing it out of love. Because they want the child to become independent and learn on their own. God did the same thing with us. We came out of Egypt, we were at a loss. But we have to become a nation. And we have to learn how to do things on our own and how to survive. God put us through the desert experience, but it was a difficult experience to learn us to be independent on our own. And therefore, there's an educational goal of the desert experience. And now you understand my analogy about school in the beginning? When you go through school, you might have not realized it was educational. Maybe some of you did. But the purpose of the school system was to educate you to become a useful adult. Now, so that's the first section. And now Moshe Rabbeinu is going to switch gears. It'll be very much connected in a minute. But now he has to give some background information. That's going to be paragraph 2. And I need someone who's in B'nai Akiva to read this. Okay, who's in B'nai Akiva? Somebody's bound to be in B'nai Akiva. Okay, you want to read? Okay. What school should you go to?
Hasma.
Oh, Brit. Okay, good. You did real machaneh. Okay. Now, okay. We're going to read Hasma was in England. Watch, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to change gears. We're going to explain why in a minute. Continue reading. Ki Hashem? If you've been to the Golan yet, you'll be there soon, I'm sure, in Atil.
End of the year.
To the Negev, you'll be. If you've been to Tisra and Tiolim, I don't need to explain the Pasuk. It's a beautiful land. Now, Pasuk Het Yonah by heart. You might have it in your Sukkah. Eretz. It's a land that has everything you need, even natural materials and metals and everything. So what do we do with all this? Pasuk Yud, you can skip the Pasuk Yud. You say that every day, don't you? What do we learn from here? God's giving you a good land. How do you thank God for the good land He gives you? Understand? Now, that's a very nice topic, but what's that to do with the first topic? You understand? First Moshe says, remember the desert experience and its educational purpose. And then he talks about how great the land of Israel is compared to the desert. Because here you're not starving, here you have lots of food. Now, in the final section, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to explain what's the danger. Who wants to take over? Someone up in Asia. This is a little too, because this is what's bad about the land of Israel. Okay. You're from where?
Melbourne.
Okay. Yeah, upside down. Okay. That's fine. You went to Caulfield, probably? You went to Beis Yaakov there? Rifkei Briscoe. That's a good school. Yishamer lecha means what? Yishamer lecha?
Watch yourself.
Be careful. Be warned. Be careful. Beware. Ben? Be careful not to forget God and not to not follow the laws. Now he's going to connect them together. Because we're going to see there's something very dangerous about the land of Israel. There's a danger in having a good land. And I'll explain why. Pentochal. What does that mean? V'achalta v'sabata v'erachta. What might happen? Maybe v'achalta, it's called v'achal v'sabata v'dashen. Maybe you'll come wealthy and eat, but what? Be satiated, keep going. V'batim tovim tivzeh v'yashavta. That's baka. You know what that is? Baka. It's your neighbor. Build nice, beautiful houses. Then flip them and sell them and build more nice houses. Yeah. Okay. I'm just making fun of my friends, okay? I wish I was like them. Okay, continue. With Korcha. Your livestock, right? Becomes, you know, multiplies. The kesef. Oh, this sounds great. What's so bad about this? You can ask for anything better, could you? What's the warning? Maybe you might become wealthy and prosperous and do well and grow. Whoa, what's so bad? Sounds like a blessing to me. But Moshe says, be aware of that. Why? Ah, why? Pasuk Yudalet. Zoram? What's that mean? It might happen with all your wealth and prosperity in the land of Israel, it might cause you to become haughty. Zoram Levavecha. Remember Ram Ben Issa? Gadol V'Nora? You might become haughty. And haughtiness might lead you, for some strange reason, to forgetting God. You ever see that happen? Only too often. Continue. Ram Levavecha V'Shachachta. You follow? You're going to forget the God who put you through school, who put you through desert university. Now, your prosperity in the land of Israel may cause you to forget God and your whole school experience. Or if you want to take modern days, you may spend a whole year in seminary, then go into life and totally forget what you learned. Because things are going too well. Now, there's an easy solution for this. Oh, one more line, I'm sorry. The big one. Keep going. What conclusion might you reach in your wealth and prosperity? You grow things, everything's going great, and you might pat yourself on the back and say, you know who did this?
Me.
I did it. What does chayu here mean?
Well.
What? Chayu does not mean valor. I don't care what they sing. Eshet Chayil does not mean a woman of valor. She might be a woman of valor, but Chayil doesn't mean valor. What's Chayil mean in Hebrew? Well, you think, what did you think, what you thought Chayil meant? What are Chayilim?
Soldiers.
Yeah. Why is an army called a Chayil? Because there's lots of, anything there's a lot of is a Chayil. A lot of anything. A lot of soldiers is a Chayil. A Gibor Chayil is a leader of many soldiers, like Gidon. A Gibor Chayil. A Chayil is a lot of anything. An Eshet Chayil is a multitasker. Just read the next couple lines. Isn't she multitasking? She's running businesses, taking care of the house. Oh, she's busy. Now, that makes her women of valor, but Chayil doesn't mean valor. I don't care what title they put on top. Eshet Chayil means a woman who does many, who's multitasking, does lots and lots of things. A lot of produce. A lot of wealth is also called chayil. A lot of soldiers, anything, an abundance of anything is called a chayil. So the common understanding is one of those many is called a chayil. You understand how the Hebrew plays games with it? But a chayil is a lot of anything. Usually in the sense of an army. But a lot, an amassing of anything is a chayil. And what might someone say? Ah, I did it myself. And it'll cause them to become haughty and they'll forget God. And what do we gain? Yeah. There's an easy solution for this, isn't there? If prosperity leads to haughtiness, what's the easiest solution to all this?
Don't
become prosperous, right? That's the people knocking on the doors all the time. There's an easy solution. If you're in need all the time, if you're not wealthy, of course you won't become haughty. There's nothing to become haughty about. So one solution would be stay in the desert or stay, be a nobody. Don't make a living. Chumash doesn't say that though, does it? Some people think so, but Chumash says no, you're supposed to be a somebody. You shouldn't be a nobody, you need to be a somebody, but you need to be a somebody who thinks he's a nobody. Understand the difference? Being a nobody and thinking you're a nobody, that's a nobody. That is a nobody. But being it's somebody who thinks he's a nobody, now we're talking Torah. Look at the next line, which explains what I just said. You need to remember the God. You need to be prosperous, but in your prosperity, who do you have to remember? Thank God who gave you the ability to be prosperous, and therefore we say, Be'achalta, Be'savata, Be'rachta. Now, how do you show God your thanks for your prosperity? A, by not becoming haughty, by keeping his mitzvot, and by thanking God. But we'll see, there's much more than that. It's what you're going to do with your prosperity, which will be the holiday in a minute. Now, if I take Moshe Rabbeinu's beautiful explanation of the desert experience, what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying is, the land of Israel has a spiritual danger, which is what? Too much good and plenty will lead you, might lead you to haughtiness and forgetting God. But the solution is not staying in the desert. The solution is not being poor. The solution is what? In your prosperity, take your prosperity and turn it into something positive. Recognize God. Express your thanks to God in your prosperity. Now, why do we need the desert experience? To get us ready for that danger. Had we left Egypt, gone right to Israel, we wouldn't have known to appreciate the difference. Therefore, God put us through a desert experience of needing God for food, needing God's man, because what do you want us to do? He wants us to live in the land of Israel, but treat its produce with the same understanding as though it's man. I'll give you an example. Who's on a higher level? Someone in the desert, watching man fall down miraculously every day, almost every day, except for Shabbat. Food coming from heaven, and thanking God for the man, or someone who works the field himself, does it all himself, plants, you know, is a farmer, the whole thing, and thanks God for his food, as though it came from God. Who's on a higher level?
The second one.
Obviously, the second one. But who has a bigger danger of forgetting God?
The second one.
So that's the give and take. You follow the philosophy behind it?
Right?
Do I live a life where I put myself in total need of God, so I won't forget God? Or do I put my life in a position of prosperity where I might forget God, but on the other hand, if I'm able to thank God and understand it right, I'm a much higher level. And that's the challenge of the land of Israel. God put us through the desert experience, and we were held back 40 years because it took us a long time to learn it. But that was to get the first generation ready. So wake up. If the first generation needed that experience, what should happen every once in a while? What do we need on a regular basis to do? We need to retrain. Why doesn't every generation need to go through the desert experience? So that would be a little rough. Chumash has a beautiful solution. Mm-hmm. What do we do once a year?
Remember
the desert experience. It's not about the past, it's about the present. No. It could be any time of the year. Does it make sense now? Chumash is dedicating 1 week a year to remember the need, the educational need of the desert experience, so prosperity doesn't get to your head. Remember that food comes from God, even though it looks like it comes from yourself. That's an important lesson of someone living in the land of Israel, because prosperity, look at history, look at your own life. Prosperity leads to haughtiness and forgetting God. But you need to be prosperous, you have to put food on the table. How do I balance them? So one generation in the beginning had to go through that difficult experience. Future generations, what do we do instead? We have to not remember, we have to know that experience, understand it, internalize it. And we need to do it once a year. Why a week and not a day? Ask a psychologist or an anthropologist. It makes sense. You need a week. All the holidays are a week. But why in Tishrei? Do it some other time of the year. We were in the desert for 40 years. Why in Tishrei? The answer should be simple now. Yeah. Okay. If the whole reason for the desert experience was to prepare us for the dangers of prosperity in the land of Israel, when is the most important time of the year to remember that lesson? During what time of the year? At your most prosperous time. When's the most prosperous time? At the conclusion of your fruit harvest. You finished your grain harvest, now your fruit harvest, now it can tally. It's called the end of the fiscal year. It's the reason why school starts in September, if you know your history of school. You know why school starts in September? Because everyone, the kids were working in the fields in the summer, collecting, but they weren't on instance why programs are. People had to work for a living way back, work hard. And you had to gather the fruits. Everyone in the family was collecting the fruits. After, when the season's over, you can go to school. That's why it's called kites in Hebrew. It's when you collect the fruit. Therefore, if I need to remember the desert experience for educational reasons, which makes perfect sense, I need to do it once a year, what's the best time of year to do it? In Chag HaSif. Now, just to show you how Chumash says this in one little line, flip over to source D, source C, but towards the bottom, from Torah and Parak Zion. See, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Torah and Parak Zion. It's towards the end of C. Chag Sukkot Aselacha Shivat Yamim. When? Paskva Migur Chavikvecha. When do I keep Chag Sukkot? When? During Chag Asif. If we go back a little bit, and Vayikra on the top of C. On Lamed Tet. Ach b'chamisha asim l'chodesh ha-shvi, v'aspechem et tvot ha-aretz, chol kol ha-shem shivat yamim. That's a little complicated. In the more, first we have Chag HaSukkot, we summarize and we start Chag HaSif. But what Chumash, do you see what Chumash is doing? Now you understand my title? There's two separate holidays, with two different themes. One about the desert, one about the land of Israel. But when I see what the depth, I understand why Chumash connects them. I need to connect them, because it's not just an agricultural holiday. During this agricultural holiday, I'm remembering God by remembering the need of the desert experience and the dangers of prosperity. And we need to remember that for all generations. Now, I want to back it up a second and show you not only Sukkot fits this model, but also the other Shalosh Regalim that someone mentioned before. What were they?
Pesach
and Shavuot. That's the other two, isn't there? How many days or how many weeks is there between Pesach and Shavuot? How'd you know that? How many days were there?
40.
Or how many weeks?
Seven.
How'd you do that math so fast? How come everyone do that? Say that word again.
Sphira.
Finish it for me. Sphirat
Omer.
Who's heard of Sphirat Omer? You've all heard of it? You've all heard of Sphirat Omer. And it's 7 weeks between Pesach and
Shavuot.
Shavuot has another name in the Bible, doesn't it? Chag HaKatzir, which means what harvest is that? That's the grain harvest. Wheat, barley and wheat. Pesach has another name in the Bible. Chumash is called Chag Aviv, which is the beginning of the spring. And if I look at my agricultural calendar in the land of Israel, just like August, September is when I bring in my fruit harvest, May, late April, May, early June, those 2 months around there, is my grain harvest. Now, why is grain so important? What do people do with grain?
Bread.
Well, on Friday we bake challah. Right? And during the rest of the week? We make bread. Sometimes rye bread, sometimes with barley, sometimes white bread, I mean normal bread. You follow? No. But in the land of Israel, when does wheat grow? Only 2 months a year. What do we eat the rest of the year? If grain only grows in April, May, early June, and then the grain harvest is over, so I have lots of grain in the late spring, early summer, what do I eat the rest of the year?
But you save it, yeah.
I what? I store it. There's a whole musical about it, isn't there? For Yosef, he was a pro. Now, it's got to last through the next winter. It ain't going to be easy. But I store it, and I'm going to eat from the stored wheat all year long. It's got to last me a whole winter. What happens when wheat gets wet? You ever notice? What do I do with the wheat? I keep it wet. How do I turn wheat into bread? I got to grind it. You ever learn Hilcha Shabbos? What they're all about. I have to grind it with the flour called soda. And then I can bake it. But what happens if it gets wet and moist? You try and grind it. What are you going to get? Mush. It's not going to work. And therefore, if you gathered your wheat in the spring, summer, and you need that grain all winter long until next Pesach, and if I plan on making matzah later in the year, what do I need to do? What do I need to do with my grains? Especially the one I need for Pesach time.
Waterproof it.
I need to waterproof it. And to waterproof it, what do I need to do? I need to put it aside in a very airtight container and keep that grain aside. What do we call that grain? What do you call that? You guys eat it every year. It costs you a fortune. What's that called?
Shmurah.
We just explained Shmurah matzah, didn't we? Look in your box. It says Shmurah Mizman Sirah. Shmurah matzah makes so much sense when you understand the agriculture in Israel. That makes sense? Now, let me explain why I did this. We count the set. We take the grain that we collect 7 weeks a year. We have to eat it all year long, but that's our staple. What's more important, grain or fruit?
Grain
is your staple. What do we eat in the desert? Man. We didn't eat grain. We had man instead. In the land of Israel, we don't need man anymore because we have grain. What do we do during the 7 weeks that we collect our grain? The day the holiday begins, the day we begin Chag Aviv, what do? We come to the Beit HaMikdash and we bring a special offering. What do we call that offering?
Korban
HaOmer. Korban HaOmer. Why do we call it Omer? How do you spell Omer?
Ayin
Vav Mem Resh or Ayin Mem Resh? Omer? Where's the first time we have that word in Chumash? You know what Omer means?
A bundle.
Counting.
What does Omer mean? Omer doesn't mean counting. Spread the Omer is counting the Omer.
Isn't that a bundle?
A
measure.
Bundle of
measure?
What? It might be a bundle, but it has a different meaning earlier.
Measurement?
Later means a bundle. And Omer is a... Oh, you're not allowed to answer. What's Omer mean?
Measurement.
What? An Omer is what?
A star.
It's a measure. What do we call this in English?
A cup.
Right? Now, is that a measure or a utensil?
Both.
Got it? It's a measure. Why? What? Now, if it's a measure, how much is a cup?
8 ounces,
isn't it? I hope. Where's my Brits? 8 ounces? In a cup? Oh, yeah. But a cup, I can have, you know, what's it called? Venti, when you go to Starbucks, there's all these different cup sizes. So you have 24 ounces already? I don't know what you have to come up to. But a cup, the Omer is a utensil. That what do people do with that Omer? You know what the first time you have it? Want to take a wild guess? There's a story about it in Chumash. Parshat B'Shalach. It's called the Source B. Right? This is amazing. You know the story of the Omer? You know, you've heard of the Omer, haven't you? I mean, you've heard of the Man, haven't you? Mm-hmm. We come out of Egypt, we run out of food. And what's... Look in Pasuk in Dalet. See in Source B? Who's my reader? I'll give you the background. We get to a place called Midbar Sin, we run out of food. And Jews, what did Jews do even when nothing's wrong?
Complain.
What do they do?
Complain.
Right? And when things are wrong, sure they complain. You might go to Amek again and have a waitress and see Jewish people at the table. What does she ask them? What? Is anything okay? We love to complain. And sometimes we even should complain. Now, God wants us to complain, and what's God going to give a solution? He wants to give us a solution. Read Pasuk Dalet for me. I need someone in this normal New York area, greater New York, Maya Milk, something. Yeah? Where are you from?
Maya.
Okay, good.
From where?
From Tina. I'm joking. Pasuk Dalet.
ויאמר אדוני אל משה, הנני ממציא לכם מן השמיים, ויצא העם ולחצו דבר יום ביומו, למען אין עשנו הילך בתורתי.
אם לא, is that awesome? But man and aseno, ring a bell that word? Nisayon? What's God explaining to Am Yisrael now, right after, before we got the Torah even? The reason God's giving you the man is to test you. Can you follow my Torah? How many laws come with the man? Before we get to Torah, the man has laws, just like Gan Eden. How many laws come with the man?
Two.
One.
Well, how much can you eat?
Only one portion.
How much can you take a day?
One portion
a day. Remember? But you can only take on?
Friday.
Monday to, but never on a?
Shabbos.
Never on a Saturday, right? Double, triple, whatever it is. You know that song. You can't take on Saturday. On Friday you get double. That's good. You know those laws. No. Two laws. What? About eating, just like Gan Eden. If you want to train a Jew, it's all the Jewish holidays about food. Didn't you notice that? Where you eat it, what you eat, not eating, overeating. We're machner. What do we do? We have special laws about man, and how much can you take again?
One portion
per day. What's that portion called? Look at Pasuk Tet, next line, Pasuk Tet Zayin. Pasuk Tet Zayin, read it.
Zadavar.
Achlo.
Omer.
Omer lagugolet. How much can you take?
An
Omer. An Omer was a little cup, a measure, that they scooped up the man with. Everyone had a little Omer cup, and that's what they scooped up the man with. Now, how much did an Omer weigh? Look at Pasuk Lamed Vav. The Omer was the tenth of an ephah. Got it?
Yeah.
And look at Pasuk Yudchet. Vayamodu baOmer. What's that mean? They measured with the Omer. In other words. And that's the first time we have the word in Chumash. This special measuring cup that they had with them every day during the 40 years in the desert that they scooped up the man every day with was called Omer. And that's all it meant. Because a dry measure in Hebrew is called an Isaron. You have that davening all the time. Isaron is the tenth of an Ephah. In the desert, this special cup was called an Omer and it held the maximum of a tenth of an Ephah. But it was mad like in Harry Potter. But you scooped it up and it was exactly how much you needed. If you took too much, what happened? They're running. Got it? And that's how we... And what happened to people who overtook? Like, I'm sure everyone did at the beginning. You know what happens to the British? Remember, you have to have a strategy, be in position. You have to make sure there might not be enough for everybody, so you got to take double, because you might not get later on. So, now, Chumash is telling you, you want to be God's people? What do you need to do? Hey, be considerate of other people. Maybe there's enough for everybody. Take as much as you need. Got to tell you? And that special training experience was typified by this Omer. That was a desert experience. That was a man. We come to land of Israel. We don't need man anymore, do we? What do we have instead of man? We have grain. What do we do as we gather the grain during the 2 months of the grain harvest, the 7 weeks of the grain harvest? What do we talk about every day? From the first day to the last day. What do we call it? What do we talk about every day?
Omer.
Omer. Now it makes sense. We wave it like a lulav in front of God, don't we? Benifa to Omer. Don't you see how beautiful the mitzvah is? We're making a statement as a nation to God in the Mikdash. What are we telling God? The grain that we're collecting, what is it? To us, calling it Omer, and counting the Omer for the 7 weeks of the grain harvest, and finishing Shavuot Chag HaKatzir. Don't you see what we're declaring in front of God? We're treating the grain of the land of Israel as though it's man. It's a beautiful statement. Way before we got to not listening to music and movies and things like that. That's much later. Omer and Chumash is beautiful. We're so busy, except we don't see how power. If you don't live in Israel, don't appreciate the beauty of the law. And to show it's important, it's in our national archive, isn't it? What's with the Luchot HaBrit in the Kodesh Kodeshim? It might have been inside of Yom Kippur. Maybe not you, but representative. Remember? Didn't the Kohen Gadol go inside? There was the Aron. Was there besides the Aron? It's in the Man from Chumash. Which showed you there's a connection between the Man and receiving the Torah. You with me? Okay, we're almost done. You follow what we did? Therefore, not only Sukkot reminds us of the desert experience, so does the 7 weeks between Pesach, Chag Aviv, and Shavuot, Chag HaKatzir. And that shows you the educational importance of the desert experience. Now, I could spend my whole life in the desert, we'll get nowhere. God wants us to the land of Israel, but the land of Israel has dangers. But there's a way to overcome the dangers, it's called education. And Torah mitzvot. But you have to understand why we're doing them, because those dangers are eternal. And it's not about the past, it's about the present. And therefore, what do we do this time of year? We need to remember the purpose of the desert experience, because it's so real time in modern day life. And even if we're not farmers anymore, we're not agrarian, we go to the supermarket, but the challenges of prosperity and prosperity going through our head are classic. Now, we don't have time to do the second part of the show, just give the quick summary. In Brian Perek Tetzain, there's a song, what do we say in Shemoneh Esrei? We say, we thank God for Chag HaSukkot, is that? Zman? Remember? And there's a song everyone knows by heart. V'samachta v'chagecha. You know that song is wrong? Not wrong. The song is cheating. Yeah. What's it skipping? Look in Pasuk Yud Gimel. Does Chag HaSukkot teseh lecha shivat yamim? Let's see. V'samachta v'chagecha. Ah. V'yitei v'chasameach is the end of Pasuk Tetvav. What's in between? Who has to be happy? You and your children and your servant and your maidservant and the Levite and the stranger, the orphan, and the widow. 7 days in front of God in the Beit HaMikdash. The same thing we had by Shavuot. The end of Chag HaKatzir. It would be a lot easier just to say everybody be Sameach. Why does Chumash give this whole list to people? You might learn psychology later on, and you learn you can't command someone to be happy. You ever notice that? Why can't you command? You can create happiness. You can't command happiness. It just doesn't work. You can be happy. What makes people happy? Being happy. Does money, does wealth make people happy? Usually. It doesn't last very long, but you can buy it, I think, can't you? Maybe not happiness, you can buy something else. You can buy, you can't buy that either, I think, the sun goes. But happiness is, put it this way, why is a farmer happy at the end of the year?
Accomplishment.
What makes a farmer happy? Bringing in lots of crops, isn't it? Prosperity makes them happy. But who's happy during harvest season? What kind of people are happy during harvest season? People who own land, because they're the ones becoming wealthy. Who doesn't own land in Israel? There's a profession there that they don't own land. They're stuck in education. What are they called?
Teachers.
The Levites. How come they don't own land? Whose idea was that?
Sure.
Oh, that was the boss, remember? Because he wants a whole tribe dedicated to teaching Torah. No, someone's got to support them. No, that's maser. But they don't own land. Strangers, they don't own land. They weren't part of the nachala. Orphans, widows sometimes might own, but they don't have it. They can't. And during harvest season, they're not so happy. There's a whole Megillah about it. Remember Ruth? I guess that's the only other time they have the word Omer in Navi. She's connecting the Omerim. And what's special about this, what's special now, is that what Chumash is telling you to do, not that you have to be happy. You have to make others happy. Understand? How do you thank God during your harvest holiday? Not just by thanking, oh God, thank you for my wealth, and being, but becoming godly with your prosperity. How do you become godly with your prosperity? You become like God. When we were in the desert, we were poor, didn't have land. Who took care of us? Who took care of us in the desert? God. With what gave us man? Where did God get the man from? Oh, he's got his ways. We get the land of Israel, and some of us are going to become very wealthy. We're going to act like gods. We're almost godly. We have so much wealth. How do we thank God for our wealth? What do we do with our prosperity? We share it and use it to make others happy. People who aren't so happy during that time of the year. And you become what they call imitato deo or v'lachta bedrachav. It's not just thanking God and remembering God, but you become godly. And that's why God's giving you that challenge. And that's why the mitzvah of Simchat Yom Tov, now I just quoted the Rambam, you can read it on your own. This is a little harsh. That's it. He says Simchat Yom Tov is not about you being happy. He says if it's just you about happy, you're not making God happy, you're making your tummy happy. But he's harsher. You'll read it later in the Hebrew. And he has some really foul language about people who don't understand the mitzvah properly. He calls their food, you'll look it up. Read it for homework. I can't say those words. But the Rambam says, and you can read them. You can know how to read. You guys are good students. Look up the Rambam later on. It's good stuff. Look, I just quoted part of it. But read that on your own. And look at Rashi on the holiday of Shavuot. Samachta v'tnei Hashem Elokecha. The people who says, you make my four happy, you take care of the Geri Yotam HaMe'an Levi, I'll make your family happy. I'll take care of you and your kids. You take care of mine. It's a part. It's not a relationship with God. It's a partnership with God. You understand the difference? It's not just, oh, thank God for helping me out, but become a partner with God in creation. That you become godly. And that's the idea of, we need to remember that message. That message is so important. It's eternal, but it's constant. And every year, we dedicate that. And therefore, Chag HaSukkot, we have to remember the purpose of the desert experience and how it applies to the dangers of the land of Israel. Now, one solution is just don't live here. I mean, that's a little Zionistic for now. The other solution is to take the challenge of living here, but take it boldly. So there's the dangers of coming here, for sure there's dangers, but also it's a great challenge. And that's a challenge in life as well. Therefore, the message of Sukkot is, it's not just during Sukkot, it's all year long. And it's not just only in farming, it's in everything in life. Do we take the challenge of prosperity, the challenge of growth and learning? It's got dangers. You go to university, it's dangerous. You go across the street, it's dangerous. Things are dangerous, because you might do something wrong. You might be thrown away. Or you can educate yourself and learn and take that as a growing opportunity and perform mitzvot in a much deeper way, recognizing the challenge, overcoming that challenge, and doing something positive with becoming godly with your prosperity. If Rukhumit doesn't say be a nobody, be a somebody who thinks he's a nobody. I want to conclude with the same transition. Tonight, Hoshana Rabbah, what are you going to do tomorrow? You're going to do those hakafas? Remember, we take the lulav and esrog from the land of Israel, we do hakafot 7 times. What's the first time we have 7 times hakafas in Chumash? I mean, Chumash and Navi. Remember Yericho? Not too far from here. Down the hill, a little below sea level, but I'm sure you'll be on the hill one day. We did 7 times around Yericho, but what's Yericho special about? Entering the land of Israel, isn't it? Isn't it the transition from the desert to the land of Israel? 7 times? And therefore, the end of Sukkot, what do? 7 times to remember we're coming into Israel. The next day, Yishmini Atzeret, we do the same hakafot with what now? Now with symbols of the land of Israel, we go back to, which is back to Har Sinai in the desert. But the desert in preparation for the land of Israel, you follow? And that's how we're going to bring the sukkah. We don't leave the sukkah. We're going to take the sukkah into our home. You understand what Shemini Atzeret is? We don't leave the sukkah, we bring the sukkah into our home. Do you understand that idea? We take the life in the desert. Life in the desert is preparation. You need to weaken the sukkah. But that prepares you for the next year in the land of Israel. And hopefully the same way your first month in Israel, ending him, the rabbi mentioned, this is the end of all, it's end of not just of Elul's month, all 40 days, the whole And now you're ready to enter the land of Israel with all its challenges, especially in it. But there's so much growth you can have from it. And then hopefully this year in Israel will be a learning experience that you'll refer back to, hopefully wherever you might be, even in Melbourne or Hasmo or England, whatever it is, or Teaneck or LA, whatever it might be, or even if you end up living here one day. Not Hasmo, that's the other way. Mir Sashem, that's better. And hopefully your Sukkot experience will be something not just a one-time event, but something you'll keep with you for hopefully the rest of your productive life. Have some